Hello, everyone. It's Steven Schleicher. Welcome to another episode of Critical Hit. Before we get into this week's game, I want to tell you that we've partnered with Metallic Dice Games. They're purveyors of quality dice and dice accessories to offer an exclusive discount to any one of more than 300 options on their site. All you need to do, follow the link in the description and use our discount code PODCAST10. That's PODCAST10 for 10% off any new additions to your dice hoard. And man, they've got some really cool ones. If you are a fan of the Critical Hit logo, the red die on the blue background, I would check out their red metal dice that they have because it's a spit image of our logo. And you can pick that up for a great price. And they get 10% discount on top of that by using the code PODCAST10 at checkout. Portion of your purchase comes back to us. That's right. A little portion of that purchase comes back to us. That's how an affiliate link works. And that helps support this show. So what are you waiting for? Go check out Metallic Dice Games. Use the link in the show notes. Go check out those red metal dice or the other red die that they have available for you or anything. They've got some really cool liquid dice as well. Go check them out. Metallic Dice Games. Thank you everybody for your support. Welcome to Critical Hit, a major spoilers podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and checking us out this week. Oh, Kevin, after last time, things are looking...
I'm sorry,
everybody, but there you go. You got to say it and say it on time. That's right. Got to give Kevin a chance to join in on the fun. Some interesting reveals.
Yes, that's right.
On the last episode.
So, Critical Hit!
Previously, we saw both the other members protecting you guys while you were in Quentin Side Out or Quentinception. I'd also be okay with that name. The menagerie was successful at protecting you, but then you had some further revelations after interviewing Black Hat, the hacker devil that you subdued. So, yes, there were some interesting revelations, and you guys chatted about them a bit. And you are in space, somewhere between Absalom Station and the asteroid belt. You don't have to move at any particular pace because you have a little bit of time between now and your next obligation.
Well, I think we have some fish shaking and clouds to yell at kind of stuff to do, don't we?
Sure. You can certainly do that if you wish. In the meantime, a courier ship has actually approached. It is moving a starship travel lane, and it hails you and is requesting temporary docking. It appears to be in good condition. It's a small one-person vessel from a known courier company, and their comms came over an open channel, usually reserved for such purposes.
I don't trust anybody at this point.
Agreed. But... I don't know. I mean, it's a one-person ship. I guess it could still be pretty nasty. I don't know. Fire, be prepared. We'll see what they have for us.
Yeah. Is there any chance that, you know, they'd send a courier with a bomb?
I mean, there certainly is, but I'm pretty sure Extreme wants to kill us on broadcast.
So. Camera. Yeah. Has to make it an event.
Exactly.
I guess I'll let them dock.
All right. A courier knocks for entrance on the ship.
I'll come open it.
All right. The courier is a haggard-looking Yosoki in uniform who quickly squeaks at you. Are you Team Lizard Brain?
Yep.
Please confirm and sign here.
I will look at the contracts carefully to make sure I'm not signing away my soul again.
It seems to be a... like the receipt pad of the courier company.
All right, fine. Sign it.
It doesn't like change or anything. No obvious infernal signatures.
Great.
They're all hidden.
Well, one of the rules with devils is they do technically usually have to spell it out somewhere. At least that's the rumors you guys have heard from children's stories. If you sign, the Soki hands you, I guess, Vangi, about the size of like a one of those yellow envelopes that can hold things of paper. And then immediately goes to depart.
Bye.
Starts the, you know, disengaging, docking procedures, all that stuff.
All weapons.
I don't know. Maybe you want to scan this to make sure if I open it, it's not going to, I don't know, make us hallucinate or poison us or...
Sure. We can take it to the lab real quick.
There's a special scanner microscope thing that can analyze the contents of something like this unless it's been particularly shielded. It doesn't appear to be. It reveals some sort of organic material in there in a rectangular shape. It would appear likely some paper variant, like maybe something a little firmer than paper. There's nothing that shows up on any of your toxin or biohazard scans.
We don't see anything wrong with it.
All right.
Your calls, captains.
Well, she'll look at Hecubino.
Yeah, open it.
Slide a little claw under and open it.
Inside that plastic envelope is another far fancier envelope within it. This one is decently large, about as wide as Vangi's hand is long, and it's ivory white with gold elegant script that says Team Lizard Brain, and then it's sealed at the bottom with a little gold seal.
Does Vangi have extremely large hands?
Yeah.
Is there like a return address, or like is the seal recognizable?
Nope. The seal is the seal of Abadar, a city in the form of a key.
Great. I'll flip the seal.
In the same flowing gold writing on the inside of the envelope, it says, "You are cordially invited to Archon Souljet's private residence on Absalom Station."
When?
Attend a code that provides directions, a highly encrypted verification key, and a packed world timestamp that means 7 o'clock tonight. Bob, you should have time to make it there if you get a move on.
All right, I'll put it into... Well, I got to wait for somebody to tell me, but I'm sure we can put it into overdrive and go.
Well, this is a whole thing. I mean, it'll give us the chance to maybe pull off the abolitionist mission. And
yeah.
But it also might mean the jig is up, and I guess he probably knows that the... Pack Devil failed at this point.
But does he know that? We know that he knows.
Did we manage to drop off the Hacker Devil and the people we had in the brig?
Yes, we'll go ahead and say that you have managed to do that. Not sure if we had actually done that, but I'm fine moving.
All right, let's go.
Bob, if you put the ship into overdrive, you'll be there with plenty of time. I'm game to skip forward, but if you guys want to have any conversations before you arrive at Absalom, you certainly can. So let me know.
I mean, do we want us to talk strategy for this meeting?
Man, I just need to get close to a
terminal.
Terminal, yeah.
All right.
Well, you need
and to by close, I think I'm going to have to be like right next to a terminal.
Yeah, don't you need to put it specifically into his terminal?
Yes.
Well, it's probably not going to be easy, especially now that we know just how powerful his attaché is. But I guess Hecubino and I could try to keep him distracted. Or maybe, does it have to be you, Bob? I mean, does it require a lot of technical know-how? Because Skridik is probably the best at being places he's not supposed to be.
Often on purpose.
Yeah, I mean, it's just plugging this in and uploading.
Well, then I say that's the goal here. Go for that, Skridik. It's going to be probably pretty dangerous for you.
Yeah, I mean... Well, I'm pretty much up for anything at this point. We're pretty much all walking around with targets on our backs now, so might as well go down swinging.
That's fair.
All right. So the mood is a bit tense in the squeaky clean as you make your way to Absalom Station, and you guys can pass the time however you deem fit, whatever's either relaxing or reflective. And in no time at all, you arrive and dock at the station. The directions from the invitation point you to a very good neighborhood within the station, near Golden Vault Productions, in fact. So, assuming you head over there, you can eventually get to the street, and station's hustling and bustling. You were just here not long ago, so, you know, it hasn't been too long since you experienced it. But this is a really, really fancy area of town. People have, like, you know, private floors of buildings in this particular area as their residences. And when you get to the address indicated, you can't immediately tell this building apart from its companions on either side. The only thing, like each one has rated lobbies with private elevators, that kind of thing. The one thing that sets this apart, or the two, I suppose I should say, are the golden mastiffs stationed outside. Assuming you enter, the doorman greet you and usher you inside. Yeah. You guys are you're all together. Everybody is cool still.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cool. Mm-hmm. All right. The lobby's carpet is plush and soft, a rich, like earthy brown. Cushions of golden eagles, griffins, and dragons soaring over the spires of a modern megacity. The walls are inscribed with architectural drawings, advanced mathematics, and a recurring theme of keys. In the center of the lobby is a large circular desk with three androids in uniform waiting patiently for you to present yourselves. There are force fields, turnstiles that would prevent you from proceeding any further into the building.
Step up, present our invitation. I'm still carrying my weapon, by the way. I don't know if they're going to make me check it. Okay.
Yep. I assume you guys are in your normal battle-ready attire.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Do you have, like, obvious bags or anything with you?
I mean, Bob carries a lot of baggage, but not that kind of baggage.
Yeah, it's mostly psychological.
Yeah, just critics. Yeah. Please.
Well, we know
probably not anything more than like maybe ammo pouches.
Okay.
Amu's typical gear is a giant shell.
Nope. Fair enough. Okay.
I'm a spear.
Once you provide the invitation, they scan it, and then they run a quick ID scan on you and admit you through the force field turnstiles to access the private elevator. As you approach, the elevator automatically opens. It's quite large, easily fitting all of you and the evidently omnipresent pair of security guards that are within it. You all file in?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool.
Not like literally omnipresent, right?
Well, who knows?
Okay.
Once you enter, you realize there are no buttons and no screens or signs to show you what floor you're on, but the doors automatically close behind you, and you momentarily feel the start of motion. It's a little odd, though, because you can't tell what direction you're moving, just that you're in motion. After a moment, the doors open, and you are in a hallway, matching the downstairs decor that leads to a large adamantine vault door.
Knock?
You guys all approach, and the vault door opens automatically, admitting you into an all-white clean room that's completely empty. I'm just going to assume you proceed. Stop me if you want to do anything.
No, that's fair.
Once you're all inside, the vault closes, and red lasers, start going from floor to ceiling. And they just scan you. It's not a Resident Evil situation. But they scan you. The air of the room is vented, and the back wall opens, which you didn't even realize it could, like an airlock. Again, you enter the next room. That door closes behind you. This room is very similar to the previous one, but it has a pair of long white tables, and there are six security personnel in the room. They're all humanoid. They're all covered head to toe in gold uniforms, including helmets with shiny gold. Any physicals from of any individual apart from like their body size. And one security person from the staff approaches each of you. They calmly request your comms, data pads, bags, and weapons. And they provide a large, clear, plastic, sealable bag, each of which is labeled with your respective name.
Are all of those things modular for me?
I mean, like built-in wireless comms, but yeah. So a lot of the weapons are also modular, like can be turned over. I think like you've got like whirring saws and stuff that are integrated, but we'll get to that.
Yeah. Saws.
I will turn over my stuff, thinking how convenient it is that we can't see their faces and therefore won't have to feel at all bad about beating them up if that happens.
if you want to conceal something, let me know, like, because that's totally valid.
Who has the thingy thing that we're supposed to put in that terminal?
I think it's you do, Ban.
Oh, do I? Okay, yeah. If I got it, then yeah, I'll totally try to
cheek it somewhere.
Cheek it and conceal it, yeah.
All right. Cool. So they do a manual scan of each of you, like probably looking for weapons or things like that. And they also do a pat down to see if you have any weapons hidden on you. For the androids, the scanning procedure is a bit more intense, but the pat down is less intense.
I have a question.
Okay, sure, shoot.
One, Amu wouldn't necessarily consider either of their weapons to be weapons, as they are also medical tools. And would have to be asked specifically.
They want your tools.
Okay.
If you don't turn it over, they'll point to that and be like, please turn that over.
Okay. Secondly, Amu is a biological weapon at this point?
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair.
They don't have to know that.
They do seem to be, more concerned with what you're bringing on you as opposed to yourself, so far, anyway.
Okay.
For the androids, though, they do have a couple of little... For your integrated weapons, Quentin, I think you're the only one with integrated weapons. They apply a sealant to the related system that makes it nigh impossible for you to deploy it temporarily.
Oh, that's so rude.
Skritik, could you give me a sleight of hand check?
Oh, man, roll high.
Alrighty, we'll see. Is that, a 30? That's a low roll, I think. No, an 11. That's decent. So total 30.
30. Nice. And yeah, your cheek pouch. They know to search it, but they aren't Yosoki. So like they ask you to open your mouth and they like kind of pat down your cheeks, but they don't really understand how they work. So assuming you're cheeking it, you cheek it really, really well. And yeah.
Do some weird mouth acrobatics, like twirling it under my tongue and around and over around to the other cheek.
This is the dirtiest sleight of hand check to ever exist. Yes, indeed.
Bob and Quentin, they also go to, they're being very, I guess, upfront about this. They're not doing it in secret or anything, but they go to apply a small bolt near your head that they say will shut down your remote network access.
No.
It is mandatory.
Bob starts acting drunk again.
Why?
Because remember, whenever he's not connected to the to the Wi-Fi.
Oh, that's right. All right. Well, I mean, I'm going to have to try and fake it. There's got to be something I can do because that is one step beyond. That is no.
Disconnected from the internet?
Yeah, that's just no.
I mean, the infosphere, excuse me.
We're not doing that. So what do I got to roll?
What are you trying to do?
I'm trying to go, oh, I am blocked from the internet. Well, not blocking from the internet.
Well, they're applying a restraining.
Well, I'm going to make them apply it wrong.
You can try to stop them if you want, but like you have to tell me how you're trying to, like if you're trying to make that not work in some way, let me know. But if it gets applied, presumably,
yes,
it will function.
do your winky emoji like you're letting them know that, yeah, I'm still on your side. Remember the upgrade? Twink, twink.
Twink, twinkity, twinkity. All hail. Oh, no, wait. That was in my brain. okay, here's what I
have
to do.
A number of different
they're applying the bolt. Yeah, they're applying the bolt to Quentin's internal Wi-Fi receiver, which, by the way, is publicly accessible. It's called Pretty Fly for a Wi-Fi. But if it weren't there, if I shifted it and instead they plugged the bolt into, say, all of my memories of Barry Manilow.
Yeah, you can try to make a quick computer's check to see if you can basically stop this thing from having the effect that they think it will have.
But I suck at computers.
Definitely a computer's check, I'd say.
I don't know. Well, if I'm shape-shifting, maybe. I'm like bluffing as to which body part. Oh, yeah, the Wi-Fi is right here behind my left ear.
They seem to... You can try to lie about where to put it to them, but they seem to know exactly. They seem to be familiar with your model, and we're about to put it in exactly the right place. So you can try to convince them that they're wrong, but that might be
no. After the third time, the GM tells you it's futile. You just I just roll with it. Okay.
After, but I'm going to be time, super the GM super tells snippy. You
it comes from a role that you're not very good at.
Right. No, that too. But I'm going to be super snippy about it.
Yeah, I anticipated that. That's okay.
Hey,
when you test it out, it does appear to shut down your remote network access.
Man, who's going to update my fanfic?
You update your own fanfic. I like that. Yeah. You mean the fanfic you're writing about others? I suppose that can be.
Oh, no, it probably is him writing about himself.
No. Other people write it. I just edit it.
All right. For each of you, they go to apply a small band. For most of you, it would be a wristband, but it can technically be applied anywhere. So regardless of your individual biology, like for Quentin, it could just be slapped onto any area of the sphere.
Would you like to tell him where he can put it, Rob?
Rob, yes, Amu would be
just right up in the cloaca.
So does anyone object or otherwise? Okay, so they apply these bands and they quickly dissolve into your skin or surface, leaving a discolored area where it was in most cases a bright green. They also then calmly, the security personnel.
Do I have any idea what this is?
Yeah, you can tell it's magical.
I'll stare at it for a while.
While Hecubino is staring at the bands trying to determine what they do, the security personnel will calmly but firmly ask for those of you wearing footwear to remove them. And those will also go in the bags. They then provide appropriately sized white fluffy slippers that are quite comfy and fit well and never come loose even a little bit. For Hecubino, I see your result there, and that's good enough for you to see that these are probably temporary keys that will allow you to ward off alarms. Judging by how it's like, you can kind of tell that this is a temporary magical effect, and it might probably will even be dismissed from you when you leave. It's possible it also is doubling as like a tracker. That wouldn't be impossible for it to do. Sure. And you see like a touch of divination magic in there, which is unusual.
I'll gesture to the others that it's that they're okay.
And he's too distracted by how comfy the slippers are. Like springing around in them.
They also ask that have them for your hands. And then they run a special scanner on them that gives you an instant manicure and removes all your dead skin and hair from your hands or claws or scales, whatever is appropriate. Uh-huh. Your fingertips feel tingly, and you note that you don't have any for the moment, like they've been temporarily removed. And Amu, they don't do anything to you, but you can glance at others and know that that is, again, likely a temporary effect. Finally, the security personnel say, one of them says, all right, let's go over some ground rules. First, do not touch the Archon unless he touches you first. Do not attempt to harm the Archon in any way. Do not take anything. Do not leave anything behind. Do not record anything. We are capable of finding those recordings and removing them from you. Do not interfere with any of the computers or devices within the Archon's quarters. Do not touch anything in the collection. We require verbal confirmation that you understand and will abide by these rules.
Yeah, you guys are so cool. Yeah. These are, yeah, sure.
They seem to wait for each of you in turn to verbally confirm.
We understand.
Understood.
Cool. Quentin and Hecubino, I didn't catch if you guys confirm.
Yes, I confirm.
In the coldest and most impersonally hateful voice Quentin can generate, he simply replies affirmative.
You can't tell if you've hurt their feelings or not because they're just shiny gold visors to you, not really people.
Well, that affirmative actually has a hidden message of you vomitous pile of excrement.
If only they knew.
Don't the layers take away of my internet. Don't take away my internet. How dare you?
If only their sense motive was any good.
All right. And then they open a door for you, and you're entering Archon Eon Souljet's private quarters. So the overall design aesthetic of this place is ultra-modern, almost to the point of being minimalist, but there are enough casual extravagances kind of littered throughout to prevent that label from really making sense. The floor is a dark gray material, sharing some qualities of both marble and glass, and it's slightly with footsteps with your slippers are basically completely inaudible, but you can tell that, like, if you were wearing shoes or boots, they'd make like a hard clacking sound against it. The high ceiling is a similar material, but it's in bright white instead, and it somehow provides an appropriate level of illumination, though it's hard to say where exactly the light comes from, as it is diffuse and ambient. The walls of the place are seamlessly embedded in the stone. The golden lines form signs and sigils, though it's hard to see the full meaning from them looking at a single character on a wall. Though, Hecubino, you can tell without even looking that magic permeates those runes, and you can feel it all around you, actually, like the pressure has changed slightly, and you need to kind of clear your magical inner ear. Every surface is immaculately clean. There is a hint of fragrance in the air. Frankincense hitting you first, blending into sandalwood, and then finally a hint of jet fuel. And while you cannot spot a single camera or microphone, you are all very confident that you're being continuously monitored. And then approaching you now in the entrance is Archon Eon Souljet in a white and gold robe, A few steps behind him looms his assistant, the 8 foot tall android, I say in quotes, Aurea, still with his shiny black dermis with gold accents, 6 arms, and a mere 6 holoscreens hovering near him. Welcome, welcome, one and all, Team Lizbrain. I am very glad to have you here in my inner sanctum. Come in, let me show you around. I don't get many visitors, which is a shame, because I'm quite proud of this. My little slice of heaven here on Absalom Station.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place.
Here into
yeah,
the...
thanks for having us.
Oh, thank you very much, Bob. I appreciate that. Yeah, sorry for calling you guys in on the last minute. Something opened up on my schedule. Take the opportunities you can, right? So he starts guiding you kind of deeper into the quarters. And Aurea hangs back, always staying a few steps behind the furthest one behind in your group. So Aurea moves to be basically behind you, not allowing anyone to loiter for too long. You quickly realize as you proceed that there are no doors to any of the rooms in this place. But when you look behind you, the walls have sealed together, preventing easy access to prior rooms or escape.
Great.
So your flight was good?
Oops, smooth sailing.
Glad to hear it. Glad to hear it. Oh, all right. Let me show you this first. This is my collection. The first room that he takes you in is a cross between a museum and a hangar bay. The largest objects in the room are a pair of starships. One is a one per model, roughly the size of the Squeaky Clean, and certainly Hecubino and Vangi, probably Quentin, all recognize it immediately. There are pedestals of varying sizes spread out throughout the room, each with a little domed force field on top of it. Each pedestal holds an item held up for viewing from all angles. The items range from jerseys to very old InfoSphere comm devices. And Soljet quickly takes you to the fighter ship and gestures broadly with one arm. The fighter is painted bright scarlet with a sharp pointed nose and strange curved edges at the tips of its wings. He says, this is the Marlin. It was the height of cool 20 years ago. Fighter style starship, 2 integrated pulse cannons, turret chain gun. But it wasn't the arsenal. It was the maneuverability. I watched this sucker twist and turn, evading impossibly. Based on an anime show, if you believe it, you can see the designers wanted to evoke the same style with the angular lines.
You said that Hecubino and I recognized it?
You recognize the next one, which the Explorer class one, the larger one. So this one is about the same size as the Squeaky Clean, same or similar overall frame model. Though obviously the manufacturer and exact make and all that are different. So this ship is in faded blue, yellow, and red with neon hot pink accents. It's clean and battered, the specific condition that it was last flown in as opposed to being repaired. I knew you'd want to jump to this one right away. It's the best piece in my collection. Team Renegade's first ship, the Outlaw. They jettisoned the first reactor core after passing too close to the Feywild portal. There's a pretty good fanfic write-up of the fictional season they spent drifting through the Feywild, too. Yeah, and as for the rest of this, well, I guess you could say I'm a hobbyist by nature. This anywhere, at any price. I've developed alternative acquisition strategies, like purchasing storage facility companies during a recession. Their terms on many of those allow for seizure of the stored assets for mispayments. Or Medical debt, that's another good industry for acquisition because it's a privileged form of debt, so you're ranked higher when asset forfeiture is invoked. Normally, that's all auctioned and settled to the company as cash, but I include clauses to let me have access to the items involved. And of course, if someone won't sell and they're not in financial distress, well, that's when my specialists come in, and they can be quite persuasive as well, as I'm sure you all know by now. Let's move along, shall we?
What, like, I mean, when he says, as sure you all know by now, like, what is his facial expression when he says that?
Oh, he seems to be in good spirits. He has a slight grin. He kind of gives like a knowing elbow shrug thing to Hecubino when he says that.
Maybe a little smug.
Oh, yeah. I mean, do you think he sounds smug? What?
Yeah, Hecubino is like, ha, yeah. But he'll like, as they leave, he'll just, like, his eyes will linger on the ship where they, like, go out that way or whatever.
Yeah, so he starts walking you guys out of the collection hall, not even bothering to show you through most of his collectibles. But as he starts guiding you into a different room, he kind of turns to you for a moment and says, well, now, you're probably asking here. And the reason is, I can tell you're wavering. Something isn't sitting quite right yet in those innocent hearts and valves for you. And I want to talk to you and convince you you're on the right path. My assistant, Aurea, prefers legal bindings. Says they're more enforceable and concrete. Actionable. I prefer incentive structures. I want you to want to be on my side. On Team Abadar, as it were. So my bringing you here is to make my sales pitch to you. Okay? A good faith outreach.
I think we'd love to hear what you have to say.
I'm glad to hear that, Vanky. I really am. And, well, you'll have to bear with me. Right this way. This is the kitchen. And Soljet's kitchen is a combination of a well-stocked office kitchen and a rich bachelor pad supply depot. There are two walls running in parallel, making the kitchen kind of a hallway of sorts. And everything's in white, all the cabinets and all of that. There's people to walk abreast comfortably, though it's clearly designed for basically one person. There's a drink refrigerator with a transparent force field as its door that holds ultra-premium bottled water from, you know, a non-packed world's planet that's been shipped in. A meal substitute drink called Fuel, designed by a famous android engineer. And a violently caffeinated energy drink. The Archon passes his hand through the force field effortlessly, and just a hint of cool, crisp air wafts out as he pulls an energy drink out and cracks the can with the same hand he grabbed it with in a practiced motion and takes a sip. As he does so, little holograms or maybe illusions, you're not sure, emit from the lower half of his robes, dropping a few golden coins inscribed with Aflor, which makes a distinct clinking sound before they fade out of existence. Oh, yeah, to explain that, I assign a cost to every action I take. I want to know all the trade-offs. Even talking to you, doing this tour has a cost, as I incorporate opportunity costs of what I know I could be making with my time otherwise. Still, I've learned I need to indulge myself a bit from time to time to stay in peak mental shape. Work-life balance is very important. From this point on, as you follow him, you notice the occasional clinking and holographic credits tumbling into the ether from his robes.
So that's why you don't host people that often?
Oh, no, I just find most people aren't worth hosting.
Flattering, I think.
I think so.
Hecubino will, when, you know, when we lean into the fridge, Hecubino will like put a hand on Bangy and say, see, being at the top doesn't set you free. You're actually still a slave to it.
Bangy nods.
There's a machine that in the kitchen that's kind of like a soda mixer where, you know, one of those ones where multiple flavors. But instead of the giant cup for soda, the machine automatically places a small disposable bucket in the loading tray. It whirs gently and a torrent of spiral-shaped neon orange snack puffs start filling the bucket, with the machine stopping before it's too full. This is neat. It knows exactly what you want. It analyzes your body temperature, gait, expression, looks you up on the infosphere, buys your data from the void vendors, whatever it needs to do to figure out what kind of its inventory, and magically that all has to be stored elsewhere. And he takes the little snack tray and pops one into his mouth. Do any of you want a snack?
Yeah, I'll take a transgressive snack.
Yes.
Yeah. the machine's pretty good. It's like, ooh, I could, oh yeah. Like, you know, it gets a spiced meat stick it's like one of those chain food spices, like your guilty pleasure, Vangie. You're like, actually, these are great.
Nice.
Snap into a soul jet. Oh, yeah.
If anybody wants anything, it provides something cool. The ones that he's having, you know, are also off market. They were that flavor was only produced for like 6 months, 19 years ago.
Makes it taste even better, the exclusivity.
And then right a bar, it forms a half circle in front of you with either end meeting the walls. The bar back has dozens of rare spirits and vintages, cases of bizarre herbs, and row after row of colorful bottled potions, some fizzing and bubbly, others thick and viscous, and they're all in every possible color combination. There's no bartender. It's fully automated. And Souljet gestures. Train on some of the best mixologist neural patterns once they were retrieved. Beyond drinks, there's elixirs here for curing diseases, poisons, curses, hangovers, anxiety, heartbreak, existential dread.
Yes, please.
Oh, yeah.
All of that.
Have at. And if you pull up, the automated bar will just start serving you potion after potion. And some of these
therapy.
Some of these are just fun, like the ones that change your hair color or what your bowel movements smell and look like, personality Ooh. Traits when you're having a party, those kinds of things. Oh, and speaking of personal care, then there's like a little white, the shape of a large egg resting on the floor. It has two openings, basically an ingress and an egress, and it's the right size for a human to stand upright with their arms and legs extended at their sides within it. Souljet takes off his robe and tosses it on a nearby tray and is wearing a simple white linen shirt and linen pants under it. The tray whizzes away, disposing of the robe somewhere. He enters the, lifts his arms above his head and out to each side. His legs move similarly, so he's kind of in that Da Vinci Vitruvian Man sketch pose. You can see from just the angles from where you guys are that the inside of the egg pod is mostly mirrors, so Souljet can see his entire body all at once. And red lasers from some of the other areas start assessing him and physically sculpting his body. The damage that they deal somehow healed nearly any defects like stray hairs, skin imperfections, an extra pound or two at his side, leaving him chiseled and fresh. A little dusting of make. Oh yeah, no, he doesn't want that. That messes with his eight pack. A dusting of makeup is applied by spindly robotic arms. His hair is adjusted and set. A light application of cologne is spritzed near him as he walks out the other side. There's a small wardrobe on the far side, and Soljet grabs a new robe from within it. The wardrobe then retreats to a wall where it melds into the wall and disappears. And Soljet says, yeah, everybody has physical needs, and this is probably the most efficient way I've found to handle them all at once. Anyone want to give it a try? He grins with the clear assumption that none of you will.
It's not wrong.
Amu raises a... No.
Amu what?
Amu takes a step forward.
Okay.
Resculpt how?
That's an interesting question. I admit I'm not a tech guy, so I don't know all the details. I'm sure Aria can provide them if you wish. He gestures to his assistant. It analyzes your genetic sequences, finds any flaws. It scans your body for asymmetries, inelegant patterns. It has access to a vast data store of your peers and members of your species to assess beauty standards.
But we are asymmetrical.
There are symmetries within things such as spirals.
Does this thing have a big knob that is set to either body or soul? Because if we can set it to soul, we can probably just kill him right here.
Oh yeah, it has that on the side. Just, oh wait, I should have been working on my
flip it. Yep.
Dang. Here's the problem, someone switched it to evil.
I kind of want to get resculpted, but then I also don't.
I know, right? This is one of those things that you're going to stay up at night thinking about. Like, but what would I look like resculpted?
I mean, a perfect sphere.
I know, you'd be yourself, but even better.
Think about this.
Have you ever let your assistant use that?
Welcome to, but he's particular in his tastes. Have you ever done Aria? It's like, no, sir.
Because the assistant's holding the briefcase, right, with the terminal?
The assistant is not holding the briefcase with a terminal or anything like that. The assistant is, in this case, just got like their normal set of data connections. They appear to have wireless. They are, you know, just going through holograms and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah, you haven't come across an obvious terminal yet. It's possible that like some of these devices, like even this pod, for instance, have terminals within them, but they might be you don't know this for a fact, but it's isolated, like not on a general, on the same network as, say, his work terminal.
Okay. All right.
You're making kind of an educated guess here. This is where you can really feel that lack of remote network access, because that is a question that would just be answered for you. But you're still a little suspect of these things that have... It's like, yeah... So from the pod, he takes you to another... This one's like a larger room. There's an enormous couch in the shape of a crescent. That faces a wall of black glass, floor to ceiling, and the ceiling's pretty high. And the couch is made of it has like a light gold fabric to it. Soljet splits into two pieces as he walks at it, allowing him to walk between them. Then it merges back together immediately. And he has a seat on the couch and gestures for all of you two as well. There's room for a dozen people at least on here. Though the Archon is sitting comfortably in the middle.
You know, take a seat.
Yeah.
Check the cushions for illusory coins.
Surround sound envelops you. It isn't virtual reality, which many of you have tried, but it is immersive if you stare at the screen for longer than a minute or so. There's a central area that is currently focused on Drifter's coverage on an obscure InfoSphere channel. The sides and bottom all have like a dozen smaller screens each. There's no like empty space anywhere on the whole wall. Some of these screens are dedicated to news, others to streamers. And when you guys move and sit on the couch, you realize this is not a normal couch. It adjusts to your presence, dynamically increasing or decreasing resistance, firmness, temperature, texture. So each of you has your own custom adjustment, and it somehow figures out what would be comfortable for you. So Vangi, for instance, it starts with a firm back massage.
She's like trying to hate this whole, like she's definitely had her guard up and it's just like almost annoyed at like, you know, her muscles relaxing.
Yeah, nice, isn't it? Yeah, we had to go through a few iterations of the Nanite AI for this one. Too many of them wanted to be something other than a couch.
Well, they're good at their job.
And he gestures, and some of the Nanites from the couch form computer just at his side. And he kind of gestures at it. It's clearly some super advanced custom interface that, you know, was designed for him. He controls all the various channels and a number of other feeds from it with one hand and one eye. This is where the magic happens. I like to consume as much content as possible. Keeps me in tune with the market, galactic politics, religion, and the like. Aurea handles the details, of course. I like to focus on the big picture.
Yes? And the big picture is?
Oh, we'll get there.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Didn't mean to interrupt this thing. Sorry. Problems focusing.
Oh, no, that's fine.
To the restraining bolt and has a little sad puppy look on his face in case Ian maybe is like, oh, this poor guy. Maybe I just need to remove that restraining bolt.
It's hard.
I don't know that he has ever thought this poor guy in his life.
Oh, no, I'm sure he's thought, ew, this poor guy.
So you're all on the couch briefly?
Yes.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this has occurred to anybody and someone would like to make like a bluff check or something like that. But those of you with decent computers would recognize that the couch is a terminal.
Aha. Uh-huh. I kind of make some eyes at Skritic. Nanoparticles are also computers.
I assume that being disconnected like he is, Bob doing that looks an awful lot like Mr. B.
I just have this image of Bob going, computer couch.
Amu knows just enough about lying to know not to try.
Fair enough. Yeah, I think I'm going to be getting on the couch and really making a show of enjoying it. And oh, yeah, this is amazing. and just kind of writhe in pleasure and that, you know, try to sneak out the little diode thing and lose it in between the cushions. Perhaps in some kind of jack, if at all possible.
So that sounds like a skill check of some sort. It sounds primarily like a sleight of hand check to me. What do you think?
I would go with sleight of hand.
Yes, I like sleight of hand. I mean, you are... It doesn't look like the Archon's paying too much attention to you individually, but Aurea is also there, and you know, what else is watching? So go for it. If you want to make a sleight of hand check, you do it.
Can I possibly assist by just being bulky and like kind of sort of blocking him?
And I'll do something weird.
You'll do something weird? Oh, as a distraction.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Not as a distraction. He'll just do something weird.
Just by default.
It'll just be weird.
Wow. What kind of checks do you guys think those would be? Maybe athletics to hide Skritic behind you?
Yeah, athletics sounds good. More like, space. She's, yeah, exactly. Basically, like again, looking like she's like just stretching out her muscles to get more of that nice relaxing massage.
Oh man, she looks like a giant basking lizard.
Does it heat up too?
So, oh yeah, for sure.
Oh man,
it heats up. And most places are typically too cold for their preference. That is. So, that'll certainly help. And Bob, did you have an idea in mind for what your distraction would be?
Being very annoying and you know, picking at the fluff on my slippers, you know, like there's like I see something on the end of it that I can't get off. And so I keep waving my hand over the fuzzy part of the slipper. And it's like everybody's like, what is this guy doing? Kind of thing. Like, why is this guy being very being very strange?
Yeah, sure. I'd say that's a bluff check.
Yeah, which one of my worst ones, but 17.
Yeah.
Good roll of the die.
Still good enough. The two of you, you get two extra assists, which raises your number there by 4, which
would make it a nice round 30.
Yeah, and that is
7 this time.
Barely. Better than Aria's passive.
Oh.
Yay, I'm helping.
It was a good idea that you guys chose to assist. I mean, that wasn't a terrible role for Skritic, but, you know, being a few points higher definitely helped. Get the drive down. Skritic, and you're hoping that you're like, get in the couch, like it doesn't have cushions, it's all just one thing. And for a moment you're worried that it's like not basically just going to reject it, like I don't know, it just won't allow you to plug it in anywhere.
Like a DVD drive that won't close.
A moment or two of you holding it in place, it reaches out kind of into the couch, and there's a momentary silver light that you quickly like obscure and like hide with your hand so that no one notices it. And then the drive sinks into the couch, and it is again silver discolored there for a moment, and then goes that same light gold color of the surrounding nanites, and it seems to be in.
I can't believe that this couch has silver light support.
Well, he has all kinds of rare antiquities, so
I guess.
Enough relaxing. Let's let me show you something I think you'll get a kick out of. And he takes you around and he walks you into a tunnel, which is a strange room, but it's kind of like a hallway, but it's got a much lower ceiling than the other rooms. The ceiling curves into the walls, which are all made of that black glass, like a screen. When you're all in the tunnel, at a gesture from Souljet, the entire thing lights up. A thousand screens all turning on at once, and you're surrounded from everywhere. One part of the wall is dedicated to awards plaques and custom limited edition digital art that was released after their victories. You see all the movies, like posters and running clips and videos, the spin-off shows, the branding tie-ins, merchandise, so much merchandise, social media videos, endorsements, behind-the-scenes footage of Win Weasel getting his makeup done and flipping the camera off with a grin, the team with other A-list celebrities, all their custom gear and off-market improvements they've had installed on their ship, the team on visiting, you know, exotic and beautiful planets, having adventures. Yeah, not bad, right? Yeah, they've done okay. They've done okay. But I think we could build something better. And Souljet waves his hand. All the images disappear, leaving the tunnel in darkness for a moment. And then a new slate of pictures and videos start bursting onto the screen one by one. And they are all Team Lizard Brain. More images from the screens or projections as holograms start popping up, each corresponding to what Souljet is talking about at the time. So, first off, you all get renewed on Drifters. The heel turn coming up? Let's do a double reverse. Faces again that only went heel because of how bad Team Electrum got. Then we do, I don't know, three seasons. Backstory interviews, pathos, promotions, new markets primed for fan base growth. And that's just at the team level. Let's talk about each of you individually. Amu, for you, we're thinking a social travel show. Amu makes friends. Family friendly, upbeat. You travel the galaxy, meeting interesting people, talking to them about their lives. Plus, you have an ever-growing menagerie of your companions with your travels. Tie-ins to big pet manufacturers and breeders, travel sites, you name it.
Amu just kind of nods along. Not sure how to respond to this.
Skritik, you could host a survival show. Be the gruff, no-nonsense guide who leaves people in the middle of nowhere on remote planets of your choice with some limited set of tools or instructions or some such. You could set up the scenarios like challenges or relationship subplots all at your discretion. Marketing is thinking a cigar might fit your image, by the way. Aria, send Skritik here a box of Castrovalian Mithril Finest. Best in the pack system.
I'll give it a try, I guess. Never been much of a smoker.
Oh, well, the pod can fix all the damage that happens to your lungs, too, so don't worry about that.
Yeah, well, I guess there is that.
Now, Bob, I know how important Android Justice is to you. So how about a foundation? Helps Androids pay off digital construction and starting software loans. You could go on a speaking tour. Write a book about your experiences with debt. We have a stable of ghostwriters. Don't worry about that.
Yeah. Foundation. Never had a foundation.
Well, I've got several. They're great. You can become an inspiration for the next generation of androids. And Quentin, speaking of androids, I think you're due for a promotion. Executive producer with a focus on content creation. There's always an appetite for more content. Starting operational budget is 9 figures. We can fast creative control, unlimited resources at your disposal. And last but not least, Hecubino and Vang, team captains. I want you two as scouts. I want you involved in finding the new stars of the Drifter's Galaxy. You'll have dedicated teams to scour the social sites, streams, and feeds, analytics teams that can find whatever demographic you're looking for, recruiters and fixers to make contact, clear up any issues. You can pay your good fortune forward. Lift them from poverty and obscurity. Take them under your wing. And those are just a handful of ideas we came up with. Whatever your pet project is, however you want to be, I can make that happen for you. Legal trouble for you, your friends, your family, that's impossible when you're with us. The best medicine, vacations, homes, credits can buy. And they can buy a lot. Now that's a legacy to be proud of, don't you think? He snaps his fingers, and the tunnel goes black again. Only the Archon's faint radiance of the falling credits illuminating the area around you. Or you can be has-beens. Not even has-beens, truly. Rain was a has-been. More like a never-was. And the price of this transaction? It's not do what I say, go where I say, when I say it. No questions asked, no complaints, no conditions, no exceptions, no matter what I tell you to do. That's all. This way, folks. We're near the end now.
Follow.
Yeah.
Imagine we are.
It's a large half oval that forms a viewing platform, as the far curved wall is evidently the outer wall of this port part of Absalon Station. You can tell that because the wall is entirely transparent. It's not clear to you what the wall is made of to even allow for such an effect, and you know it's not a force field. That wouldn't be stable. You know this isn't common around the station because you'd be able to see it, presumably, from elsewhere. But your eyes just beyond the wall. The platform is certainly large enough to hold all of you and then all, many, many more. And as you all walk further out into it, you see that you must be on some sort of ring, or as the platform basically forms like an outer lip of the station. So both the ceiling and floor disappear at some point, making it seem like you're suspended entirely in space, walking on an invisible platform surrounded by nothing. Maybe you realize this already, but this view is something special. We're in the heart of Packworld space, not to mention the galaxy's busiest spaceport. There are thousands of ships coming and going from Absalon Station every day. A view like this, unimpeded, is tricky to arrange, and even I only have it for a few hours a day. I use it to commune with Abadar. I'll let you see something very, very few ever do. I hope you appreciate it. The Archon stands still for a moment, his head bowed as he murmurs to himself softly. Slowly, a golden nimbus starts emanating from him, and he raises his arms inch by inch until they stretch outward, like Soljet is trying to wrap his arms around the vast expanse of space. His eyes are now solid gold and glowing brightly. He opens his mouth, and instead of teeth and a tongue, you see a brilliant golden light emit from his mouth. The light starts pouring off of him, from his fingertips, his eyes, his mouth, even wisps from his clothing, all pouring out into space. The light never appears to cross a barrier, but the glowing cloud of curling ephemeral lines reach out towards the stars, expanding in a lattice. The gold mist hints at form, but lets the stars form all the key anchor points. Looks like a very large man sitting in a huge chair. Maybe a throne, maybe a recliner. The mist starts to fill out the figure adding details like bulging veins, long fingernails and hair, wide eyes that are always open, extra layers of muscle and fat, robes hanging loosely from the arms and tight across the chest and belly, strange tubes connecting the enormous figure to his seat, running into his arteries in his arms, legs, and neck, connecting to his temple and gut. The gold light forms infinitesimal, but somehow still distinct, motes, like you can see every cell of his body, every molecule that comprises the chair and the tubes. Every one of those little dots of light is a person, and their movement shows their economic activity. And sure enough, you can see they're not stationary. The motes flow throughout the figure. Soljet picks a point that is breaking away from a small cluster it was near and falling some distance from the belly down towards the legs and the bottom of the chair. His focus momentarily out of the figure, or maybe like zooming in somehow so you can see the details. The light mote is dimming in radiance as it drops, shedding parts of its light, which are all absorbed by the other motes within the ecosystem. As he pulls the mote into view, a list of expenditures pop up near him, like a holoscreen, but it's certainly not one. Spending on children's hospital, trauma therapy, intoxicants, the story of a family unraveling, all there in such painstaking detail, it would make an accountant blush. Oh, Aria, increase our allocation in rehabilitation centers. We already have a substantial intoxicant business, but get them coming and going, I always say. The Archon releases the mote, and it drifts back into place, shrinking down to its tiny original form. Isn't he glorious?
What does his face look like expression-wise?
His eyes are held wide. His is like hanging loosely. It looks like he can see anything, or maybe he's seeing everything all at once. He looks neither happy nor sad nor angry. He looks almost held in place, mouth hanging limply. Now, Soljet actually seems transfixed.
Right.
Yeah.
Forgive me, y'all. Right. I'm going to talk at you for a spell. In the first, there's a rich boy. Born on the fourth rank in Pyramid Ball, as they say. Fed by a silver spoon, best education credits could buy, tutors, trainers, tailors, the work, not in the picture. He could do anything he wanted, but no one expected anything from him. He gained an ability to see the price of everything in a glance, and to see it in the eyes of other people too, what they wanted out of him, how they could profit off of him. Not knowing what to do with his life, in a fit of desperation, he scoured the infosphere. He had the best links available at the time. And he found these fan sites for a show, Drifters. Team breakdowns, archetype discussions, optimization threads, speculation on who was going to win, fan art, fan fiction. He dived in. Learned how to build his own thruster engines from a retired engineer from the show. Raced a little, just to show he could. But what he really did was take his fortune and turn it into something else entirely. The second story. There's a boy who grew up dirt poor. His family, such as it was, scraped and scrabbled and clawed their way through life, squandering their opportunities due to defects of character and will. Boy was alone a lot, but the one thing they always found the credits for was the infotainment networks, The infosphere was a little different back then. Shows were the most popular things. And he watched them. But there was one he truly loved. Drifters. The pilots and science officers and the engineers and the antics. The planets and the traps and the explosions. It was all so different, so far away. A different life. So he made himself a promise that someday he'd be there. At the racetracks or behind the controls or something. It didn't matter. But he'd be somebody important. He scraped and scrabbled and clawed, but he didn't miss his opportunities. He didn't waste his time or let anything get in his way. Straight to the top. Now, do you think either of those stories are true? Does it matter if either of them are true? They wind up in the same place regardless. And with that, the right eye of the golden avatar behemoth glimmers in a way that you instantly know means it's Archon Eon Soljet. I'll make a confession to you. I don't pray to Abadar. Maybe that makes me a bad priest, I don't know. But God isn't the right word for what he is. A god is some ancient primordial creature, or worse, just an upjump mortal infused with the power of the faith of its worshippers. He is beyond that. He is an emergent property of intelligent life, of civilization. Like evolution, he works in the background, whether you believe in him or not. What I'm showing you is more than divinity. It's the truth. It's how the galaxy works. That's far more powerful than a mere god.
He looks sick.
He's big. That's all.
Big things can look healthy.
Then he just nods at that.
You don't understand what you're seeing.
I think we understand all too well.
Whatever sickness he has, he'll fix. That's what all the little motes will do.
What? Why do you think that? Why won't he just get sicker?
He's only grown over time. He's more powerful now than he's ever been.
And you're helping him?
I see how the galaxy works, and I in certain ways. I don't think I'm better than somebody else. I just think I see more clearly than they do. All right, I admit, I think I'm better than them. But you will too. You'll be the best versions of yourself. That's my pitch. You get to stay yourself. Just be your best selves. A and what you do, who you associate with, where you go, all that. But deep, deep down, you'll still be you. Only better. Don't shrink from the truth of the world. Embrace it and let it shape you. Think about it. This is a serious decision. I expect your performance at the championship round will be your answer. I have faith you'll make the right decision. Aria will see you out.
I'll leave.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As quickly as possible.
Yep.
Yeah. You exit the way you came in, and the security personnel give you back your bags, weapons, devices. They remove the network access control bolt. Any sealants or stuff they apply, like a little bands, have already started to fade. They say that those will just fade automatically. But you're welcome to keep the slippers.
I don't have feet.
Well, those of you that got slippers are welcome to keep them.
you can sit on mine.
As you walk back out onto the streets of Absalom Station, even if you don't want to, you can't help but see the golden leviathan that is Abadar whenever you close your eyes, and you hear the faint sound of clinking coins and falling credits all around you. And that is where we'll end things.
Ooh, thank you so much, everybody, for joining us this week. Hopefully you got a little something out of that. Maybe some insight, maybe some for reflection. Who knows? You can write to us, podcast@majorspoilers.com. Let us know what it means to you. Until next time, here's hoping all of your dice rolls are critical hits.
This podcast is copyright 2022 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.